Hi, this is Todd Ogasawara. Today is September 9th, 2011. This is Comics News Podcast number 11. And today, my buddy Jay Stone and I are going to talk about another pair, of obscure heroes. Our other friend, Emil, couldn't make it for this podcast recording. And so we've got two obscure heroes. I'm not sure which of them is more obscure. But but which one did you choose?
I chose Ambush Bug.
Okay. And I went with a comic book superhero named Magic Man, a very generic name and probably not that well regarded, which is why it didn't last that long. But I'll let Jay go first in alphabetical order. Why don't you start off with the Ambush Bug, Jay?
Okay, Ambush Bug. Do you remember Ambush Bug?
You know, I do kind of. It's a DC Comics, right?
Yeah, it's DC Comics. And he wasn't always a superhero.
Oh, he wasn't?
No, he actually started as a supervillain.
Hmm.
So he was, you know, Keith Given?
Yes.
Right? Very famous writer and artist.
Right. He did my favorite, the run on Legion of Superheroes.
That's right. He did one of the best runs on Legion. He created Ambush Bug. And Keith Given has a lot of, he has an interesting sense of humor. Because you remember he did the revamp of Justice League?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a great one, too.
I have, like, the first 20, 30 issues, and it's, like, the best. It's one of the best stuff.
Yeah. It was also funny, as I recall.
Oh, yeah. It's just hilarious when Martian Manhunter – you find out Martian Manhunter is addicted to Oreos.
Right.
And I think later on you find out that Dr. Light has the reason why she was a villain was because she used to drink too much diet soda. Anyway.
Not your usual explanation.
No. And that's the kind of humor that, Keith Given brings.
Right.
So Ambush Bug was all, I didn't know who Ambush Bug was. And I just saw it like it was either in Action Comics or it was like a one shot or something.
Right.
And it just looked totally weird because I like to look at, I like to pick up stuff that I've never seen before that looks interesting. And he basically has this green suit. You never see his face, and he has these long antennae at the top. And he's basically insane. His sense of reality is completely warped. I'm kind of like on a theme now, right? My last Gear Hero was insane.
Right.
Now this one is also insane. And he had one incredible power. He could teleport anywhere he wanted to, instantly.
Ah.
And so he was a supervillain, but he wasn't a really nasty supervillain.
He's not like a Joker supervillain.
No.
Yeah.
He's like a really annoying supervillain.
So like Batmite. Well, I guess he's not really a supervillain.
Yeah, Batmite wanted to steal things. You know what, I just tried to, touch the screen on my laptop to make it move.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what the job says, right?
That's the problem with having an iPad and touch everything. It's not moving! So, originally his suit is what it was like, gave him the power of teleportation.
So is this guy human?
Yeah, he's just a regular guy.
Ah.
He has the most regular name. His name is Irvin Schwab.
Alrighty.
Okay. And then his name is Irvin Schwab. And it's been theorized that his... Okay, the theory is that his suit, comes from a guy called Brum-L.
Okay, like from planet, Krypton?
No, from the planet Schwab.
Okay.
Okay. He sent his clothes because his planet was doomed.
Right.
He wanted his wardrobe to survive.
Right.
But it was intercepted by a giant radioactive spider. And so when it crashed on Earth, only two articles of clothing survived. And that was the Ambush Bug suit. And that's how it gained its power to teleport, I think. And the other part that the other piece of clothing that gained powers is Argyle. A-R-G-H, exclamation point, Y-L-E, exclamation point, Argyle, which is an Argyle sock. And he, when Ambush Bug becomes a superhero, that's like his arch nemesis. Because he has like a Doctor Doom complex. And he has a metal mask. The sock.
Right.
Living sock.
This so animated kinda, sock.
Yeah. So he wreaks havoc on like Superman a lot. I think that's the one I read. When I read it, I just couldn't stop laughing. It was just so funny. Basically Keith Giffen just keeps on making in joke after in joke, and just really, completely annoying Superman. And actually, Ambush Bug even made it into the 30th century.
Wow.
I have some place where he ended up with the Legion in the Legion universe, and he just annoyed the hell out of him. And then the one thing that's what's interesting about some of the Ambush Book stories, you have Julie Schwartz?
Sure, the editor of DC Comics.
He becomes a character in the book. So Julie Schwartz ends up in one of the Ambush Book books when he was, you know, while he was still alive.
Right, right.
And then Ambush Bug is so annoying. You know, have you ever read Sandman or know about the Endless?
Sure. DC? Yep.
Right. So death is a manifestation, right?
Right.
So Ambush Bug, it can't even die because death doesn't even want him.
He gets
kicked out of the afterlife.
Wow. So he's kind of like immortal?
Not really. It's just that death doesn't want it.
Ah.
Right. So he wasn't on her list. So he got kicked out. And he even meets Dream, the Sandman.
Right.
So eventually, well, the thing I like the most is that, well not the most, but one of the things I like about it, Keith Giffen even poked fun at Spider-Man.
Right.
Remember when Spider-Man had a black costume?
I sure do. Yeah, yeah.
In Secret Wars. Anyway, somehow Ambush Bug's costume turned black. Right. And he almost becomes the Black Beetle.
The Black
instead
Beetle.
Instead of Ambush Bug. And then over the years, he's appeared in, you know, his own miniseries and in other one-shots, and he appears in other comic books. And sometimes he appears in, like, crossovers.
Right.
Like, even, I don't know if you remember, DC several years ago had a crossover called DC 1 Million.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
Which was, like, supposed to be the what would happen in the 1 millionth issue of the comic.
Right.
Of whatever you're reading. So apparently in DC 1 million in the year 11,021, he was in Hong Kong, China. Hmm. And he was a bartender. So he keeps on appearing. And he was even in Flashpoint.
Right.
Well, not him, but his name. They used his name to represent insect-based... they're not all heroes. They were villains, but they were fighting like either Wonder Woman or Aquaman or something. And I think they all get killed. They were called the Ambush Bugs. So for him, eventually, his suit becomes permanently attached to his body.
Ah.
So he can't take it off. So sometimes you'll see him like with clothes over his suit.
Right.
Like, you know, like polka dot. Kind of, underwear, you know, and shirts and things like that. Like t-shirts or whatever.
So even though he's obscure, he's really showing up in a lot of places. I did while you were talking, I grabbed Wikipedia and I found out that Ambush Bug's first appearance was in 1982. So come next year, he's going to be, what is that, 40 years old? Am I counting that correct? 30 years old? 92? 30 years old. Yeah, 30 years old.
Oh, yeah. He's been around for a while. And actually, he got mentioned in Comic-Con.
Oh, did he?
And yeah, because I listened to the DC podcast.
Right.
And in one of them, because he's Keith Giffen is part of the 52, he's doing OMAC, I think, right?
Right.
I think he's doing OMAC. Someone at one of the panels was going to, not the audience, but someone on the panel basically said, Keith Giffen's not doing Ambush Book. I guess people wanted Keith, you know, people who know about Ambush Book,
right,
like me, always want to see more Ambush Book because it's just so funny. You can't, it's not the kind of thing you can see like every month. But if he had like a 3-issue series or 2-issue series or a one-shot, I'd probably pick it up if I knew it was around.
Right.
Because it's just so entertaining. But they had to announce that at one of the panels, they said, Keith Giffen is not going to do Ambush Book for the time being. So don't ask. So I guess a lot of people were asking, when is he going to do Ambush Book again? So for people who like DC, he's a pretty popular character, but he's still obscure. He's not like one of those that you're gonna know, and you know a lot of people aren't gonna know a lot about him.
Yeah, even I, you know, I've heard of him. I've heard the character's name mentioned or written about somewhere, but I don't think I've ever read of anything with him in it except maybe briefly. I can't remember if he showed up in Crisis even briefly or anything.
You never read a single Ambush Book story?
I don't think so.
Oh, if you ever get a chance, you should pick one up. Like his first appearance, or the one where he went to visit the Legion.
Yeah, that sounds like a good one. I like Legion.
That was, and I think it got even more funny because I think I haven't read in a long time. You know the Legion of Substitute Heroes?
Yep.
Right, they're kind of like jokes, right?
Right.
So not only was Ambush Book there, the substitute heroes were there.
Ah,
I'm pretty sure. And I think in that one, they're trying to capture Ambush Book. Everyone's trying to get Ambush Book, right? But he can teleport instantly, so no one can get to him.
Right.
Right. And so everyone's all getting really mad because he just keeps on annoying everyone. And so what ends up happening, you know, you ever heard of Stone Boy? That's another obscure.
Yes, I remember Stone Boy from Legion of Substitute Heroes, sure.
So Stone Boy tries to go after Ambush Bug, right? But all he can do is turn to stone.
Right. And then he can't move at that point.
Can't move. So he tries to, like, hit him.
Right.
Right. He turns to stone. He falls off a platform or elevated area, like a building.
Right.
Okay? Ambush Bug teleports, and Stone Boy gets stuck in the sidewalk. His head in the sidewalk. So you have these, you have the other substitute heroes like Fire Lad, Chlorophyll Kid, or Color Kid, or I forget his name. And they're all standing around Stone Boy, and the storyline keeps on going back to the picture of Stone Boy with the other substitute heroes either sitting or standing around him, trying to figure out how to get Stone Boy out of the sidewalk.
Out of the sidewalk, right.
Right. Because, like, Fire Lad goes, well, maybe I can burn it out. It's, yeah, but then you're going to melt him or something. just that alone was funny, how they were trying to figure out how to free Stone Boy from the sidewalk. And then one was like, what if I do use my powers? What are you going to do, turn him blue? Because I think Color Kid was there.
Right.
That one was a good one. That was probably my favorite appearance of Ambush Bug, was when he met the Legion. I'm pretty sure that's true.
All right. Oh,
Wikipedia,
so
do they have the publication? Like all the ones he's been in?
I'm looking at it right now, and my mouse just froze. Why is that? Let me see. Oh, that's interesting. It doesn't have like a publication list, but it does have links of which comics he's been in. It just doesn't have comic book numbers necessarily. And it does have mention of the Legion of Super Substitute Heroes. Oh, and it mentions that, I guess in Flashpoint, there's a reference to ambush bugs, but I guess it's not the same thing.
Yeah, those are the characters that took the name the ambush bugs. They tried to form their own group to fight the either the Amazons or the Atlanteans.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say, for an obscure character, he sure gets around.
Yeah, he does. Well, he can teleport. And now he can never take off Bromel's clothing.
So he's got one suit forever.
Yeah, pretty much. But he wears clothes over that.
Ah, got it.
Yeah. Right? He has a suit and he wears clothes over that.
Okay. So is that about it for Ambush Bug?
Yeah, I think so. It's so funny. If you ever get a chance to read some of his stuff, especially the early stuff.
Right.
Like when you met Superman the first time. And then when he met the Legion, and I think his first miniseries is probably the better one. It's so entertaining. It's high hilarious.
Okay, so let's see. So my pick as for this second round of obscure superheroes is a character called Magic Man. One word, no spaces. A very generic name. It was published by American Comics Group ACG, which disappeared many years ago. And it only lasted a little over 2 years, it being the series that he was in a comic book, which I believe was called Forbidden Worlds, published by ACG. Now, Forbidden Worlds is exactly what you thought it was. It was kind of an anthology comic until Magic Man made his appearance in January 1965, many years ago. And it's kind of odd, you know. He doesn't really get a lot of respect. I mean, the character didn't last very long, and he has a very odd costume. Basically, he has a green turban on his head with green gloves. He's got kind of a sleeveless, I guess you could call it like a male ballet outfit or a
it does look like that,
or what you see gymnasts wear, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's kind of odd colors. So it's a kind of a black vest and green tights to go with the green turban and gloves, I guess, and a purple cape. Now with the turban, you might think, well, that this character might be, you know, have some kind of Middle East connection, but no, he's Italian. which makes the costume even weirder in terms of, you know, not kind of referencing the ethnicity correctly.
What was his alter ego name?
Now I got to go think about it. Let's see, Cargill. Yeah, and I guess it's sort of a anglicized version of the Italian name of his father, whose name is I'm going to probably mess this up. Cagliostro, Cagliostro, who was an 18th century wizard. And yeah, that means that Tom Cargill, or the Magic Man, was actually also born in the 19th century, you know, somewhere, or I'm sorry, in the 18th century. So he's a couple of hundred years old, and they never quite figure that out. Now, the other odd thing about this comic book, and maybe why I liked it, is, again, it was set in the mid-1960s. I mean, it was printed in the mid-1960s, published in the mid-1960s, and it was set in Vietnam. Which is, you know, I mean, I can't think of any other mainstream comic that was, you know, set in the war zone. I don't think even war comics were set in Vietnam during the 60s. Although
how did he end up in Vietnam?
He was in the army.
Oh, so he was stationed there.
Yeah, he was like a private or a corporal or something like that.
Okay.
And his nemesis was his sergeant who just hated him. His nemesis in, you know, his civilian life, his sergeant wasn't a supervillain or anything like that.
Oh, okay.
And I guess you could kind of think of him as a poor man's Doctor Strange. He really wasn't quite as magical as Doctor Strange. In fact, really, his magic was sort of limited. He could fly, he was pretty strong, he could kind of shoot these, what I guess we would call like a, you know, ectoplasmic bolts or something like that.
Did he have to say words, like spells, to do the powers?
You know, I'm trying to remember now. You know, I don't have these comics with me anymore. I mean, they're at my parents' house. I'd have to go find them. But I don't think so. I think he just sort of pointed and, you know, he wasn't like Doctor Strange with incantations or anything like that. Okay. So it's more of a superpower attributed to magic than, you know, I mean, even his outfit is more of a superhero look versus the, you know, the Doctor Strange magician kind of look. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons I think that I really like the comic book is the art. And I did a little bit of research on the art because, you know, I think my cousins gave me a bunch of them or something. I can't remember how I got this series. I think I'll have almost the whole 2-year run. But one of the things I really noticed about the comic I like is it was a very clean art. And for those folks who've read Superman comics from the 1960s, there's a reason for that. And that's because one of the main artists for Magic Man was Pete Constanza, who fans of the old Jimmy Olsen comic book series will remember because he did that. And the
really?
Yeah.
And really? That wasn't because I think that I may have one or two of those Jimmy Olsen ones.
Right.
Okay, Pete Costanza.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Kurt Swan look.
Yeah, it is. And there's a reason for that, right? Because, I mean, DC had a very much of a house style. And Pete Costanza, and also, although he wasn't credited because of, I guess, contractual obligations with DC, Kurt Schaffenberg, who did the pencils for Lois Lane comic book, did many of the covers. In fact, maybe all of the covers.
Superman's girlfriend? Lois Lane?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. So he did many of the Magic Man covers. And so if you look at Magic Man, it has a very 1960s. I mean, this was published in the 1960s, but for fans of the 1960s artwork, it had the crisp, clean lines of the Superman comics of those days. And that's because these were the artists from DC that, you know, they're freelancers and, you know, they're making a little extra money on the side with this other publisher. So
yeah,
the
A lot of people, I know at one time a lot of that kind of style went out of favor,
mm-hmm.
right? But then, you know, in some ways, when I've read about, like, other artists who their influences were, like more modern artists, they look to that time.
Yeah.
And they have an appreciation for that style.
Oh, absolutely.
And even I was, like, in the 80s and stuff, I was getting kind of tired of the Kurt Swan look.
Right.
And then, you know, I was getting more into like the George Perez or you know, the more modern type, like Miller look or Bill Simmons.
The more detailed look depends. Yeah.
And then nowadays, even many years ago, but not that many years ago, but you know, when I'm maybe within the last 5 to 10 years, I've looked at the older artwork and there's a certain quality to it that is really kind of, attractive.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my to this day, one of my favorite art teams is Kurt Swan and Murphy Anderson.
That's true. And with those two guys together, they're very good.
Yeah.
Sometimes when Kurt Swan's inked by someone else,
not the same.
But when they're together, they're very good.
It was magic.
They're very good.
And I think
Murphy
there's
Anderson by himself.
Yeah, Murphy Anderson was actually a very good penciler also, although he really didn't pencil that many that I can recall.
But he did every once in a while, pencil stuff. But when he was a very good inker.
Yeah, and I think it also brings up the importance of inkers who, you know, probably don't get as much recognition as the pencilers. But there are some inkers that really, really made the artist shine. You know that, and you realize that when you see a different inker inking the same artist.
Yeah,
and like Tom Palmer, for example. Tom Palmer on John Buscema's pencils were just magic.
Did they draw?
They did the Avengers run in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, just before the Neil Adams run on the Avengers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for a long time there was too much in my mind of swing to that kind of realism look.
Yeah.
And a rejection of that especially what, you know, what happened to Kurt Swan when he just, like, when John Byrne came in.
Right.
He just basically lost his job being the you know, the penciler for Superman.
Right.
Which he had done forever.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not knocking John Byrne, but I'm not a big real fan of his work. Because his faces just don't look right to me. They just look flat.
Right.
And drawn out like a mask.
Right.
And then when blocky. Then I look at, you know, Kurt Swan. He was more of... He spent more time on what the people look like. Versus the backgrounds.
Right.
Getting that kind of detail. He was very human... human-centered artist. Focusing a lot upon their face and the character's appearance versus what you saw in the background.
Right, absolutely. And I think even to today, Kurt Swan probably defines the Superman look. I mean, sometimes when I see other artists drawing Superman, and I says, wow, this just doesn't look right. And I realize it's because I'm thinking of Kurt Swan's Superman.
Yeah. I'm sorry to digress, but I think...
No.
You know, your whole, you know, that talking about the clean art, it's something you don't see, in my mind, enough of nowadays.
Right. Right. It's right. And that's, again, I mean, for folks who are listening, you know, go head over to your favorite search engine and go look up Magic Man. You might want to use the letters ACG, American Comic Groups, to help distinguish it from other Magic Mans, you know, and songs and that sort of thing. I think you'll see what I mean if you see a couple of the drawings that show up in the searches. It'll be very reminiscent of the DC Comics art at the time because, again, it's basically, you know, two of the best DC artists of that era, Pete Constanza and Kurt Schaffenberg, or at least two of my favorites. I always thought they did very clean work. Every panel was distinctive and fit with the next panel, and they really told the story well from the art point of view. But in any case, so Magic Man lasted a little over 2 years, and he pretty much disappeared. He had a couple of crossovers with some of the other equally obscure characters from ACG, like Nemesis, which I actually liked. And maybe that'll be my next obscure character. Nemesis was kind of a dead man kind of character. He was actually dead before he became a superhero.
Like Spectre?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
like how Spectre used to be.
Right.
Who knows? They keep on changing Spectre.
So, you know, now that I think about it, you know, Magic Man as a character really wasn't that... let me rephrase that. His character is interesting because, unlike most superheroes, you know, most superheroes hide their superhero identity by being meek and mild like Clark Kent, or being sort of wildly extravagant like Bruce Wayne. But in all cases, they're still successful human beings. I mean, you know, Clark is a reporter at a, you know, large city newspaper, and of course, Bruce Wayne is a, you know, multimillionaire, and all the superhero secret identities were mostly, you know, I think most of us would consider them successful human beings if we just met them on the street. You know, they have a good career and all that kind of thing. But Magic Man, you know, is kind of a low-ranking regular person in the army during the early days of the Vietnam War, and he was kind of harangued on by his sergeant.
Was he like a private?
Yeah, like a private, okay, or corporal or something. It kind of like I guess a relationship would be similar to those of you who remember Gomer Pyle, the TV show.
Was it humorous, or are you just talking about like
the haranguing? Yeah, it was humorous. It wasn't like hate or anything like that.
Oh, okay. So it was meant to be like a comic relief part of the story.
Right, right. So in any case, in fact, after they get out of Vietnam, they become roommates, which is, you know, bizarre. Why would you be a roommate with somebody who, like, you know, beat up on you all the time? Yeah.
That's like Forrest Gump, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right, with the Lieutenant Dan, who hated Forrest Gump.
Right.
But then they become best friends.
Right. And I guess the other twist to it, in a kind of a Lois Lane twist, while the sergeant hates Tom Cargill, you know, the secret identity, he's a great admirer of Magic Man.
No way.
Yeah.
You, that little tiny mask was enough to just...
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know...
Even though they lived, they were roomies. That mask just hit everything, yeah.
Right. Well, you know, it's like my daughter, when we were watching Smallville, she always tells... spoke to me, and we were watching Smallville, and about, you know, how he puts on the glasses later on to mask his identity, and my daughter would say, how could anyone be dumb enough not to recognize him with and without glasses? And, you know, hey, comic books, what you gonna do, right? Or TV show in this case. But anyway.
Well, this is an aside, though. Has she ever seen the original Superman movie? With
Boy, that's a good question. No, she hasn't. She did see the last Superman Superman Returns movie, but no, she hasn't seen the Christopher Reeve Superman, which I do have on DVD.
Sure, that it, I don't know if you noticed, but I saw at some point in my life, I saw like a Christopher Reeve was talking about what he tried to do to make Superman look very different from,
right, hunching from over Kent and pulling his shoulders in and all that kind of thing.
Well, you know, there was one more thing they added. He parted his hair in the opposite direction.
Oh, I never noticed that.
Yeah, and they did that on purpose because he said, look, Lois Lane is not dumb. She's going to figure it out. So they had to do more than just slouching and acting timid, right, you know, and everything like that. So what they did is they made his hair go the other way when he's Clark Kent, from where he has it as Superman. And when he's Superman, he has that S curl, right?
Right.
So, I remember him. I remember in some interview, a long time ago, Christopher Reeve was talking about that was one thing they added to the character to make him look even more different.
Right.
Besides just the glasses.
So they changed the symmetry of the head by changing the hair parting. Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Anyhow, that's Magic Man, obscure character, kind of an odd looking character, but with great art, and that I think. Anybody looks at it, it gets past kind of the odd ballet suit looking superhero costume, and including the colors. And, you know, the fact that he's, you know, an Italian American but has a turban on, which I guess, you know, I guess some magicians are associated with having a turban on their head for some reason. I've never quite understood that.
Why was that?
You know, there must have been a famous magician. We should research this, but I would guess there was probably
like
a famous
Johnny
magician.
Carson, right?
Yeah, that's right. He used Karnak. To do that. The great Karnak.
I mean, he's not
yeah.
a magician, but he's like kind of like a magician.
A mentalist. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, he's got that huge turban thing, right?
Right.
But yeah, where did that ever come from?
Yeah, I'm not sure signature, I guess, to signify that you're a magician or a mentalist or something came from. But, you know, actually, if you look back in comic book history, there are several, you know, several magical characters that had turbans on their head. And even though that wasn't part of what, you know, they're white guys, right? Basically, it's not part of their culture.
Yeah. that is so bizarre.
Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those things in comics. I mean, you know, why does the comic book Thor have little wings on his head? I don't remember seeing any Vikings with wings on their head, but or helmets,
that's
rather.
That's true. That's more like Mercury.
Yeah, it's more of a Greek thing, isn't it? I mean, yeah.
And actually, Vikings didn't even have horns.
Is that right? Now, that I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I remember reading that someplace, like, or hearing it on one of the many podcasts I listen to.
Right.
Viking, like real Vikings, they didn't put horns on their helmets.
Which makes sense, because what animals that grow in that that latitude would have that kind of horns when you think about it? I mean, there are antlers, yeah. You know, there are animals with antlers, but I can't think of any horned animals that far north.
Right.
one of those strange things about our cultural heritage, I guess. Okay, so that's Obscure Heroes number 2 with Ambush Bug. And I learned a lot about that since I'd never actually read one of his comics. I think I may have seen him appear in like a panel or two somewhere. Mm-hmm. And Magic Man from way back in the 1960s. And I'm going to have to do some more research because I'm really enjoying going back. And, you know, I as I said, I didn't even realize why I liked it so much until I really started thinking about it in the last couple of days before this podcast. And I found out that Pete Constanza and Kurt Schaffenberg were two of the artists involved with it. And I said, well, that kind of explains it for me. And I love that art from that from that era of the DC Comics. Yeah, okie dokie.
It's good art.
Yep. Okay, so that takes care of Comics Use Podcast number 11 and Obscure Heroes Part 2. Talk to you later.